Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 58 of Season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Travis Bowe of Real Comics Heroes. Welcome back to the show, Travis.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We're just going to take a little stroll through New York today.
That's right.
So minute 58 begins with Money still taking a trip through the city and ends with Garber having an idea. So we left things off yesterday with Arthur and his partner. We don't know his partner's name. Or Albert. Sorry, Albert and his partner. Arthur, Albert, trying to make their way through the city with an escort of two motorcycle cops.
Mm-hmm.
And this minute opens with a long shot of them just flying through the city again. And then we're back in the dispatch area with Garber, who then picks up a microphone and goes, "Inspector, where are they now, please?" So it's interesting, the way that it all works back then.
Yeah.
That you have to go one through the other. It's like he has to call Inspector Daniels. Inspector Daniels then needs to call, continue on. It's not a straight communication. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're all on the same band where you can just say, okay, where are you guys right now?
If this was, if this was remade today, we'd have drone footage following everybody or satellite, following people. So
exactly, they would also probably have like boards on the in each of the rooms, with the low jack of each of the cars and stuff like that, and say, oh, and you can see the car moving, on the map. I mean, this movie does sort of show that with little lights on maps.
Yeah, very rudimentary. Yeah,
very. Well, I don't know if it's very rudimentary, but for the time, that was the technology.
Sure.
From today's perspective, yes, it was rudimentary. But the fact that they know that Pajoman James is near there because there's a little light bulb, on the screen by the 28th Street. That is pretty interesting that they can do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, from a 2025 technological perspective, it makes no sense. But I guess 51 years ago it did. And the response he gives is Center Street, just north of Chambers. So, I decided to look up, on a map of Lower Manhattan.
Yeah.
Where's the Federal Reserve Building and where is Chambers Street, just north of Center? Did you also look that up?
I looked up Center Street and Chambers Avenue. I don't know if I said Avenue, but yeah, I did Center Street and Chambers.
Right,
and
They're both streets.
Yeah. So found it on the map, did a city or a whatever street view, and they're exactly where they say they are. I was shocked, when he says north, I'm just past that intersection, they literally mean that. Like, they're extremely accurate with that description. So
yeah, but because what I find really interesting is it's not that far from the Federal Reserve Bank. Meaning, they've been driving. We know how much time they've really been driving. It's not that long, but it makes it seem as if they've been driving a lot further than they really have.
Oh, maybe, yeah. I thought it was interesting that when we open this minute, we see them driving along that kind of plaza, and then you pull up that intersection on the map. And again, they literally are just past that. And that whole plaza is City Hall Plaza. Like, that's so right. That big building and courtyard that they pass, that's City Hall.
That's right. City Hall Park.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah,
true to, I guess the this section of the city that they're being. So,
right. I think that you know, because this is a clearly a very New York movie, they're going to try to be as accurate as possible.
Yeah,
they filmed around there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
You know, and because the City Hall Park is on Broadway and Chambers.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's definitely exactly where they tell us there.
Yeah, and I feel like that puts them. They're driving up Park Avenue, I think, yeah, is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
But then that becomes Bowery. I don't know if they take that the rest of the way that we'll talk about it during the course of the week or where they get to.
We'll talk about it during the course of the week or where they get to eventually. But yeah.
Yeah.
So we have the City Hall Park, mm-hmm, which they've passed, and it's a public park that surrounds New York City Hall and is known as the Civic Center of Manhattan. And it was this area has been very prominent throughout the centuries, even, because it goes all the way back to the 17th century where people were using that. A man named David Provost, who came to New Netherlands around 1638. He was one of nine men who were elected by the people to govern New Amsterdam, and he himself owned 35 acres of land around where we have this City Hall Park.
Okay.
In the pre-revolutionary era, there were many rallies and protests around that area and stuff like that. In 1765, New Yorkers protested the Stamp Act there at that particular site. And just a year later, they also rejoiced in that same place when the Stamp Act was repealed. In 1766, the Sons of Liberty erected the first Liberty Pole, which was a commemorative mast that had the word Liberty on side of it. They put that in that spot also.
Okay.
There's a chapel, St. Paul's Chapel, which is part of Lower Manhattan's Trinity Church, which is also right there in that area. And they even built a jail around there that was known as Bridewell, which was an American prisoners of war were being held there during the American Revolution. And Continental Army gathered in this particular commons on July 9th, 1776, to hear George Washington read the Declaration of Independence.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah. And then in 1783, American forces recaptured the Civic Center, and George Washington actually was there and raised the flag in the park.
Huh.
And they actually named Washington the president in that spot. And after his inauguration, he went to St. Paul's Chapel, right near there.
So, dang.
It has a lot of history.
Yeah.
The particular spot. Yeah.
Right on.
So they continue with, you know, they give the description of where they are. And then we're back with Garber, who's just shaking his head and goes, that gives us 7 minutes. Just not enough time, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hear Daniel say, even if they get up to 28th Street on time, we still got to carry it down track on foot. And he goes, no way, sir. You know, these guys are all very pessimistic that they're going to make it by 3:13.
Yeah.
But I like the way that they give us a little bit more exposition here, because I don't think you would probably be able to confirm this more than I can. You probably didn't think about the fact that you actually also have to carry it down the train track at this point.
Right.
Without them actually stating it. You know, they're telling you something that is on the one hand a given, but it's something you don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and I can't, I don't know how far underground they are. I don't have a good, you know, yeah,
right. I think
sense
at
of
one point
how.
they said, I think they said at one point that they're like four blocks down, meaning that the 28th Street station is there, and they're around maybe 24th Street, underneath 24th Street. What? But there's no
Okay.
access to there from anywhere else. You have to
Yeah.
come from there. And then we get another shot of the police car, driving through the city, trying to get to where it needs to get to, swerving in and out of traffic, which is great. And one of the guys said that not Albert, the other guy says, I always wanted to do this. And Albert goes, look, we're scaring the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, including me.
I like these two guys. I don't think they get much else to do later on in the movie, but I do like them in this little spot, so.
It's fun little comedy between the two of them that they're, as they're driving around. It also doesn't look like they're driving very fast.
Yeah.
You'd think that they're on a deadline. They should be going a little bit faster than they are, but
Yeah, there's a lot of traffic though. You know.
that's true. And then we're back with a shot of Garber. And once again, I give this movie so much credit. I don't know if you noticed it, but there is a clock on the wall that
Oh.
we've come across many times. Okay, and that clock is accurate. It
Okay,
says
wow.
it's 3:07.
Dang.
Okay,
That
that's just amazing that they
Yeah.
kept up with the continuity here. Again, he does say that they have seven. Right. Okay. You know what? If they have 7 minutes to get to 3:13, there's not you're not going to get much more accurate than that, and that's
Right.
just amazing. I've been watching that clock every time they show it.
I'm trying, I don't even looking
If
for it
you can
now.
see it, you can see it at the second 30:32, where Garber
Okay.
is trying to think of what he wants to do,
Gotcha. Coming up to it.
and
Oh, jeez.
I mean that's just amazing.
Yeah.
Most movies just avoid having clocks for
Yeah.
that very reason.
In all these scenes with Garber, have you talked about his yellow tie?
It's been mentioned, but if you have
Yeah.
something you'd like to talk about, if it makes you, if it reminds you of mustard, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, I definitely like it, it stood out to me. Just, I don't know if you've seen I Think You Should Leave or are familiar with that show at all.
No, I don't think I've ever seen that.
Okay. It's really funny, and there's a part where a guy crashes. I'm not gonna set up the entire thing, but basically someone points out that someone's in a
It's a, I
hot
think you
dog.
should, is it, I think you should leave with Tim Robinson? Is that it?
Yes. And so this guy is wearing a hot dog costume, and he says, well, that could be anybody that's that, they're looking for somebody who did something. And he says, well, that guy's dressed up like a hot dog. And the guy looks down and he's wearing a tan jacket, a reddish shirt, and a yellow tie. He's like, oh, I am dressed like a hot dog. And that's kind of what Garber looks like here to me. So,
Maybe I wonder if he was actually parodying it by
maybe.
giving him that same type of look. That's
I don't
really
know.
funny though. But yeah, I can imagine him looking like a hot dog with the way
Yeah.
the brightness of
Yeah.
that tie for sure.
But I did look up like just yellow ties in general, just like what do they signify? And according to the tiebar.com, yellow ties signify creativity, optimism, and energy. From a buttercream to a bright sunny hue, a yellow tie will express your open-minded cleverness. And it says wearing a yellow tie with casual and business casual outfits will convey your open-minded enthusiasm. So,
Ooh.
I'd say he's not always an optimist in this, but he's certainly creative and he's clever, so.
I like how it says it's an open-minded cleverness, because I think that does work for him, because Garber is clever. Again, they start off by showing us him, by introducing him to us as the local tour guide. But he quickly takes control of the situation, and even what we're about to see, he's one of the few people here that's really thinking out of the box of how to deal with which I think is one of the reasons why he's such a great character, because he's not following the dots with everything that he does. I like that. I like the way that that does it. And at this point, he we see that he like comes up with some sort of idea. We're not really sure what it is. And then he walks over to the microphone, and everyone's like staring and watching him, which I think is great. And he sits down and takes the DJ mic, and he goes, "Palom 123, this is Garber. Come in, Palom 123." And then we see a shot of Blue with his crossword puzzle book, taking the speaker and saying, "All right, Garber, this is Palom 123." Garber goes, "The money's en route. Making pretty good time too, but it won't get you by 3:13." He goes, "Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that." He goes, "Listen, suppose we get it to the station entrance by then. Will you change your deadline from delivery to you to arrival at 20th Street? Would you do that at least?" And again, I think it's a nice way for this character to negotiate it.
Because
You know,
they're
because it's he's basically saying, well, you don't really need to go against what you said. You said it has to arrive. He's not, and we'll get to this more next week. But the whole idea is that we don't know specifically the distance for between everything that's going on here, and everyone has different opinions as to where they need to get in order for it to be on time. That type
I
of thing.
feel like that kind of threw me a little bit watching this. It's just where they're supposed to take the money and what if everything was working out, according to plan, but it didn't help when a lot of the underground scenes were so dark, hard to see what's even going on. So yeah, I definitely got a little lost when they were bringing the money down to them. But
But you see, you don't have to talk about those minutes, so you're fine with that. You get to stay up on top of the street. But yeah, it's again, it's a nice negotiation ploy, because it's like, okay, give us this little this little bit that we're asking for, because it's really not going against your rules. That's the way that they're trying to explain it to Blue, and we're gonna have to wait until tomorrow to find out how Blue is actually going to respond to that.
Is it one of those good, minute cuts where it we're left on him considering it?
Yes.
Just a nice, like, him, you can just see him pondering it as it like fades out. So
Right. It's should I do this? Should I let him have it? Do I really want to kill someone right now, or do I just want my $1 million? I don't know. I don't know. But yeah. So, did you have anything else you wanted to discuss about this particular minute?
It was nice seeing Julius Harris, as Inspector Daniels. I know him as Teehee from Live and Let Die.
That's right.
He's really good in this. I like when, later in the movie when he and Garber like are actually in the same place together. Like they have
That's right.
some,
And he goes, "Oh, I thought you were taller or shorter. I don't remember which word he uses, but whatever."
I think shorter, yeah.
Right. So yeah, it's nicely done with the way that they. I mean, it's also interesting. I mean, again, I'll talk about this more when I get there in a few weeks from now. But the idea of having characters who don't meet, and then when they do meet, there's some sort of surprise to the characters, but not to us. That type of thing. So yeah, That's very good. All right. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Hijack Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five movies featuring some sort of hijack. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Yeah, it was. I kind of struggled with this one a little bit. Like, there's plenty. There's definitely plenty of movies to pick from. But
just wait till Friday. That I'm assuming you're struggle with you more with that one.
Okay. I threw this one in my number five. So it made the list. And then I've got Passenger 57 was on there. Then I don't know. In my number three, or number three is Under Siege 2, Dark Territory. That's one I kind of grew up on, and I'd never. I still haven't seen Under Siege, but I
really,
you know, I saw the sequel as a kid. Yeah, the first one came out. I was, you know, too young to have seen it, and then I just never, you know, went and watched it.
Okay, I think you need to take a break in the middle of your Tony Scott movies, and you
should watch Under
Siege. I believe so. In my opinion, it's the very best Steven Seagal movie.
Okay, I mean that's not hard to do. I don't.
Well, apparently it is. it's you know, because you got to find one that's actually good.
Yeah. So where am I at? So then number two is I think Broken Arrow. I would count as a hijack film because they do hijack the bomber at the beginning.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah. Might have to fudge that one a little bit, but
no, that's okay. I just rewatched it a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's a fun movie. I think Travolta is a little over the top there.
Oh yeah, of course.
He plays the character, but it's still fun.
Yeah. My number one would be Con Air.
That makes a lot of sense. That would be up there with your number one. Not surprising at all. All right. Every day we have another game called Name That Remake. So we will spin the wheel and see what movie Travis will have to try and guess today. Hopefully it'll actually be one this time that he's seen.
Yeah.
Again, it's random. I'm not...
Oh, yeah.
Bye. Okay. I'm wondering... I know you've heard of these. How's that? Whether you've seen them or not is a
right. problem.
But we will see. So the original movie came out in 1936.
Okay.
And the remake came out in 2002.
36, okay. 2002. Okay.
Yep. A simple-minded man receives a inheritance that makes him want to make many changes, but people around him think that he's being too easy with the way that he's handing out the money.
Okay. Is this Mr. Deeds?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I saw the remake once, but I knew it was something about him inheriting a bunch of money.
Right. Here, I'll read the synopsis of both of them from IMDb. So the original Mr. Deeds Goes to Town from 1936, Frank Capra movie. An unassuming greeting card poet from a small town in Vermont heads to New York City upon inheriting a massive fortune and is immediately hounded by those who wish to take advantage of it. Then you have the 2002 remake with Adam Sandler. A sweet-natured small-town guy inherits a controlling stake in a media conglomerate and begins to do business his way. Hmm. So, yeah. Hey, that's pretty good. I don't know if I would have guessed that one so easily.
Yeah. There you
go. Good. Nice. So, Travis, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Travis Boo?
Yeah, just look up Minute of Thieves, and you'll hear me talking about Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, 1 minute at a time. As this episode comes out, I should be on hiatus so that I can work on and complete the final third of the movie, but you'll still have 100 episodes to listen to waiting for you. So there you go.
All right. And how many do you predict you still have will have left at this point?
It'll be 43 episodes. So you know, did 50 episodes, took a little break, did another 50 episodes, taking a break, and then I'll come back with 43 to finish it out.
Excellent. Very good. All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Midnight. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you'd like to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow,
achoo. Gazoon tight.